He's been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
And welcome to the Wednesday midweek edition of the Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management, a nationwide fee-based only money management firm. I'm broadcasting again today from the beautiful Bloomfield Hills, Michigan. We've got geopolitics dominating the headlines today. Unfortunately, there's not much we can do about that. The NASDAQ is down 76 points. That's a half of a percent. The NASDAQ is at 13,457. The S&P is down 19, and it seems to just be hanging out in the 4350 area right now until things cool off a little bit. They're pretty heated right now. The Dow is down 106. That's only 30 basis points, however. The Dow's at 33,891. There's some action in crude oil today after the hospital blast, which has been traced to the Palestinians or to the Hamas with a misguided rocket. Crude oil is up $1.50 to 88.16, and of course President Biden is in Israel today. Gold is up $34 an ounce amongst all of this geopolitical turmoil. Gold's up 1969, and the 10-year is up just one basis point. That's good, 4.86%. So welcome to today's The Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management, a nationwide fee-based only firm, and we are in one of our great states in the United States of America. We're in Michigan again today in Bloomfield Hills. Last night we took the Woodward Avenue after we got done with our appointments late in the evening and headed down, went to downtown Detroit. The last time I was in downtown Detroit, it's quite a while ago. I can't believe the difference, how much nicer it is down there. And I think you can thank probably guys like Mike Ilitch, who took the Detroit Lions Stadium down there. You've got Tiger Stadium down there where the Tigers play. You've got the Detroit Red Wings down there where they play. And, of course, all of the development that has gone on around that area, a pretty nice area. And I got to see one of my iconic places, Motown, where some of the greatest music of all time was recorded down in that basement. Pretty hard to believe to stand there in front of Hitstown, Motown, where Berry Gordy and groups like the Temptations and the Supremes and Stevie Wonder and Smokey Robinson, etc. Man, was that great music. Ate at a good restaurant last night at a historic mansion near downtown, the Whitney. I just was thinking of how much I've been to the Henry Ford Museum many years ago. How did that change the world? The automobile, the assembly line, and putting the automobile into the masses. I mean, it was a game changer. And today, you know, we have game-changing technology. I've seen many in my lifetime. Most of the people I meet with, we meet with, are more in my age group. You know, we're in the 60s, late 50s to even 80s, you know, in that era. And we've seen a lot of these transformational changes come. And I think to a man and to a woman, we all worry about the upcoming generation. So you better not let us down, kids, because we got a great country to protect and save here. Well, the market's going to be nervous today. The hospital blast in the Gaza Strip killed somewhere in the neighborhood of 300 people. The Pentagon is saying that the missile was fired by Hamas from a cemetery, from a cemetery next to the hospital. The missile misfired and blew up the hospital. And, of course, Hamas immediately blamed the Israel. It was an Israeli attack. But, unfortunately, in today's world, with satellite imagery and all the high tech that we have, they were able to trace it to their misguided, misfired missile that blew up that hospital. You've got President Biden in an unprecedented visit to Israel today, landing at the Tel Aviv airport under heavy guard. You have some skirmishes up on the northern border with Hezbollah in Lebanon. At this point, they don't seem to want to get into it too much. And you have a pending invasion, but I'm sure there's some heavy-duty negotiations taking place right now in Israel. So that's where it stands. The big casualty today, oil prices up $1.57 in the markets. And, of course, the market's nervous. And in the meantime, we have earnings being reported. And we'll get to some of those earnings reports here that have come in. We've had a pretty good start to this earnings season. And by the end of this week, we'll have about 85 of the 500 companies that have reported. We're getting up around 15 to 20% of the companies. Tesla will report. Nothing else matters. Tesla will report after the earnings tonight. You know, in a lot of conversation that I've had, a lot of people obviously connected to the auto industry in one way or another. And the threat to our U.S. auto industry. And, of course, Mr. Musk is one of the top threats and has already done severe damage. Good things for him and bad things for Detroit with his own assembly line, now called Gigafactories, and how far of a lead that he has over the big three in the electrification of the car. A lot of back and forth still in the UAW strike. I'm trying to think how many UAW strikes there have been since I've watched the markets. There's been a lot, and there doesn't seem to be much progress there. It's hurting the workers. It's hurting the big three big time. And something that hopefully will get resolved at some point in time with both sides, you know, being able to walk away with some sort of a victory and being able to continue. In the meantime, we have, yesterday we had quite a comeback in the market late in the day. You know, the initial news was that the Chinese, cracking down on the Chinese technology and their chips was going to have a major impact on our chip makers. But, you know, throughout the day, one by one, most importantly of all, NVIDIA saying we see a very small impact. And, of course, they would be the ones that would be hurt the most because it's the high-tech chips that they're after, saying we don't see much impact from this these new rules, which are stricter and tougher on our chip makers. The 10 years a big story. We're at 4.87 this morning. Now let's just say that's where it's halted in the past. There's no guarantee it will halt there now, but we've been holding that line. That's been the resistance area, 4.85 to 4.86, somewhere in there. That's the high for the year. We're matching that high, which means we're bumping up against resistance once again, and. We need to hold the line because the interest rate situation is a tough thing. It's tough on the tech stocks, on their multiples on the S&P 500. It's tough on the building industry, where right now the 30-year mortgage is up around 7.7%, which knocks a lot of people out of the market. A car loan up around 9%. If businesses want to borrow right now to expand their business, you know, you're looking at 7, 8, 9% up in that area. So it definitely has a big dampening effect on the overall economy. And, of course, some sectors worse than others. There's a pretty busy economic calendar today. A lot of Fed speech today. Fed's Waller, Fed's Williams, Fed's Bowman, Fed's Harker. And Fed's Cook, wow, five different speeches coming at us today from different members of the Fed. And at 2 p.m. today, Eastern Standard Time, we get the Fed's beige book, which also will be a market mover. And then, of course, at around 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, sometime shortly thereafter, in one of the most anticipated reports of the week, Tesla is slated to disclose its Q3 earnings after the closing bell. We'll be right back. This is Bill Gunderson. It's the Best Stocks Now show. Welcome back here to the second quarter of today's Best Stocks Now show. The market has improved a little bit here. That's always good. Sometimes that initial reaction when you hear about tragic news, like we heard about the hospital in Gaza, the market will have a big sell-off. And then, you know, the facts start to come out and the market starts to sort through it and all this and that. It's a sorting process, and it starts to come to its senses a little bit. The emotions get taken away. And I would just say this. You know what? When I meet with everybody, a lot of people here yesterday and today, I get a lot of different views of people from different walks of life. And I always get asked, you know, what about this? What about that? What about how much money we owe? What about the dollar? Is the dollar going to crash? And I would just say that, you know, those are all out there. They're kind of ancillary issues, however. I remain focused on the Big E. The Big E, not Elvin Hayes. I grew up watching Elvin Hayes with the Houston Rockets. No, the Big E in the market is earnings. How do you explain the fact that the S&P has gone from 660 to 4,350 since the last Great Recession in 2009. How do you explain that? Is there an explanation? Yes, it's mathematical. Because earnings have gone from $60 per share during that period of time to $220 this year and expected $250 next year. Now, those are the expectations. The market's going to trade on those expectations. Now, there's those out there that don't believe the market will meet those expectations. There's those out there that believe the market will exceed those expectations. There's conspiracy theorists out there that say the analysts are lying or the companies are lying. Well, you know what? I've watched earnings come in for 23 years. They usually come in within a penny or two of what the analysts were expecting. And if anything, companies sandbag the analysts so that they can beat those estimates. So it's the best we have to go on, and it makes it a heck of a lot easier. It takes a lot of the emotion out of the market. During my time in the industry, I have found no better indicator. The two best indicators are, number one, earnings for the stock market, obviously, and number two, interest rates. Because that impacts the multiple on those earnings. And let's just leave everything else. There's a lot of noise out there. There's a lot of reasons to pop some Tums or Pepto-Bismol some aspirin, whatever, because of all the noise and all the different things that could happen. So, you know what? I mean, since 1999, I've heard all of the different, every day, there's not a day that goes by that I don't see some kind of doomsday forecast on the market. And, you know, I tell the people that are really negative or bearish on the market right now, there's plenty of reasons to be worried, yes. There's always reasons to be worried about the market. if you think that the dollar's going to crash, go ahead and buy a short position then. There's an ETF called UDN, UDown. And if the dollar crashes, which at some point in the future, you know, there's going to be some issues with the kind of debt we're running. But as of now, the dollar is stronger than ever. So go ahead and short the dollar. Put your money where your thoughts are and where your predictions are, and you'll get crushed. People have been crushed that have been shorting the dollar. Short the big tech stocks. Shorting the NASDAQ since 2000, you can look at a chart of that. It's been absolute disaster. Shorting the S&P 500 has been an absolute disaster. Now, I'm not saying there won't be another huge bear market or huge sell-off, but you've got to take advantage of what's being offered out there right now. This year is different from last year. This year is all about large-cap growth U.S. companies. Small caps have been left behind. They're basically flat on the year to slightly down. Dividend payers have been left behind. The Dow's only up 1% this year. The international markets have been left behind. For the most part, they're all negative for the year. The bond market has been left behind. The gold market has been left behind. What has worked? The NASDAQ. The NASDAQ's up 27% this year. And we've been fortunate so far this year to have been heavily, from January 5th on, when I said the NASDAQ is bottom, that's where we have been focused this year. And the NASDAQ, you know, things started to transition a little bit on July 1st when we entered the second half of the year. We lowered our exposure somewhat to the NASDAQ. We didn't sell our positions. We just lowered our exposure because we had some big gains and some outsized positions like NVIDIA and a few others. And we started to spread out into a few other areas of the market. And that's been the only game in town. And it's the only game in town until further notice. And if you've got your 401k, there's different ways, different strategies about the market. We've had two people come in and talk with us who are with a local company that really spreads things out. Okay, that's one way. That's one strategy. Instead of picking the 25 best stocks in the S&P 500, they own the S&P 500 along with most of the stocks in the world. You know, one of their biggest positions is the World Stock Fund or the World Stock Index, okay? That's a massive index. There's going to be about 2 or 3% of the stocks in that index, 5% maybe at the most, that drive the growth, and the other 95% are just kind of dead weight. That's my opinion. I am not an index fan. There's a lot of dogs in the index. The AT&Ts, the IBMs, the Johnson & Johnsons are good companies and great companies, and you still pay a lot of money to them every day, every year, etc. But they're not growth companies anymore. And just as indexes follow earnings like they have all the way from $60 in earnings in 2009 to $220 this year, companies have to do the same thing. And when I go back and look at an AT&T, just picking on them, they have the same earnings, basically, that they had in 2009 that they have today. There's been no earnings growth. So where is stock price appreciation going to come from? From nowhere. And I saw other portfolios from a big regional firm, very large regional firm, publicly traded company that manages money. Two very different people that we met with that maybe were hours apart from each other in our meetings, and they had both had the same exact portfolio. And yes, there were the Abbott Labs, the Johnson & Johnson, the IBMs in those portfolios. And, you know, look, I take it, this is an all-star baseball team we want to put on the field. Those are not all-stars anymore. They're not even good stocks anymore. They're not even average stocks anymore. They're mediocre stocks. So that's why I call it the best stocks now. Everybody has a different view of what those are, but that's what I focus on. We'll be right back.
This is Bill Gunderson. Thank you for tuning in to today's Best Stocks Now, Best Inverse Funds Now show. I put several hours of research in during the wee hours of the morning each day to bring you the very best cutting-edge stories that I can. To get 2 free weeks of my newsletter, go to GundersonCapital.com. To talk to us about our fee-based only money management services, call us at 855-611-BEST. Now, back to the second half of the show.
Welcome back here to the second half of today's Best Stocks Now show on a weekday in the market. The market's biding its time. The earnings picture has not changed. If anything, it's strengthened since the beginning of this earnings season. The forecasts for next year haven't changed. The forecasts for 2025, believe it or not, have not changed. But there's a lot of friction in the world right now. There's an economy in the U.S. that, believe it or not, is still too strong for the Fed's taste, and we'll learn more about that in the Fed minutes, exactly what they think about it right now. How can I make such a bold statement like that? Because I see the retail sales numbers coming yesterday. The consumer drives the economy. Better than expected on the retail sales. The job market drives the economy. We get the unemployment numbers every Thursday. I watch them every Thursday. They've been right around 200, a little over 200,000 now for a long, long time. At some point, they will start going up. That's another question I get asked. You know, Bill, I know you're more than just a passive investor that stays the course. Come hell or high water, what warning signs will there be at some point in time? Well, it comes down to earnings erosion, really. Earnings expectation erosion, rising unemployment claims, a weakening consumer. The Fed is trying not to put us over the line, which would create a hard landing, where you've got a combination of high interest rates and putting the economy into a recession or no growth. That's stagflation. Not a good combination. We had that in the early 70s with the very high interest rates. I was talking to someone this morning. We remember being happy to get 10 or 11% home loan back in those days. And I recently, one of our family got a home loan about a year ago, had to pay just over 3% and was complaining about that. I should have got it under 3. Well, now they're 7.7. Okay, so be grateful that you got that loan. And that creates an issue, obviously, in the home market. All these people with low three loans, they're going to be very reluctant to move up to another home because their payments would go up astronomically with today's interest rate environment. And that's why you've got mortgage rates or mortgage applications dropping. So that's the world we live in today. The next year will be different. Every year is different in the market. I don't think any 2 years are very rarely alike. This year is completely different from last year. Last year, the worst place to be were growth stocks. This year, they're the only place to be. And not just growth stocks, but the big ones. I met with one gentleman yesterday. What a great guy. Man, it's just I just love to talk to people. I wish I had more opportunity with face-to-face meeting with folks, but you know, he was interested in what would you buy for some grandchildren these days. And I said, well, you know, in today's world right now, there's about a dozen, 15 maybe, stocks that really are the cat's meow. And you go outside of that, there's not that kind of growth opportunity in other stocks. So anyways, that's the world we live in right now. That's the market we live in. I don't believe in having a big, wide asset allocation net out there because, number one, I don't want to have any exposure to bond funds, none. And yet the traditional asset allocation model says if you're 60 years old, doesn't matter what interest rates are doing, you should have 60% of your assets in the bond market. That makes no sense to me. What if we go to 17% again? If we go from where we're at now, just under 5 to 17%, you know what that'll do from the bond market? But you're 60 years old, says the asset allocation model. You should have 60% of your assets in the bond market. Well, I just say that's total idiocy. Total idiocy to do that. Falling earnings expectations are falling. We're going into a recession. Well, you should have the other 40% in the stock market. Well, you know what? There's times when I don't want to have anything in the bond market, thank you. And now's one of those times. And last year was one of those times. Individual bonds is a different story. Going to hold them to maturity. They're going to fluctuate in value. But a bond fund, you don't have that luxury. You're at the mercy of interest rates. This is one of the worst bond bear markets for many, many years. In fact, one of the worst bond bear markets in history, some have been saying, as the bond market got pummeled. How bad was it? Silicon Valley Bank had big reserves that were invested in long U.S. treasuries. Last year, that was stupidity. And the value of those treasuries, got clobbered. And all of a sudden, their balance sheet doesn't look so good. And then you get a run on the bank, and there goes Silicon Valley Banks. There's times when you don't want to have any exposure to the stock market. When the earnings, it all depends upon earnings. So anyways, maybe I sound set in my ways or way different than everybody else. Well, I've just found during my career that Wall Street is one big gob of mediocrity for the most part. They take the course of least resistance and put you in an ETF that has 5,000 stocks. Instead of narrowing it down to at least 100, you know, maybe you could do a little better than that. So anyways, I just think there's a lot of mediocrity in my industry. UK inflation unchanged, 6.7. It's remaining stubborn in the UK because the euro area itself is down to 4.3. We're running at 3.6 right now. But remember when we were at double digits not that long ago? Yes, the interest rate's going up. Sometimes time takes care of these excesses, but the rising of interest rate, the raising of rates, speeds up the time to get inflation under control. China's GDP growth slows to 4.9%, but it beat estimates. That's another area you don't want to have any exposure to, is the emerging markets. This is not a good year for that. There have been some excellent times to have exposure to the emerging markets. This is not one of those times. And, a lot of people have 401ks at work, and you have different choices. You usually have international markets, which are kind of the developed markets, Europe, for instance. You have the emerging markets, which are the emerging economies around the world. You usually have bond funds, you have the stable income funds, which are mostly just money market, and then you usually get into U.S. stocks. But there's different kinds of U.S. stocks. There's large cap stocks, there's mid cap stocks, there's small cap stocks, there's micro cap stocks, there's growth stocks, there's value stocks. Well, all these different asset classes that I just mentioned, the one that's working now and continues to work until further notice, large cap U.S. growth. And in particular, you know, the 15 or 20 stocks that are driving the asset. Well, isn't it dangerous to have your money kind of concentrated in the best areas of the market? Well, the antithesis of that is having it so spread out that you can't really even, match the S&P 500 because you've got so many stocks that are mediocre, that you're dragging around like an anchor. you know, that's the antithesis to that. If you think being so spread out is better, you know, the market's going to go down. Everything's going to go down when the market tanks, even those 5,000 stocks in that index. So anyway, I'm just bloviating here. And NVIDIA, AMD, Intel slide, Wall Street Digest added export rules, but I liked what NVIDIA said. NVIDIA said that would have very little impact on them. I like Kyle Bass at Heyman Capital. He says stop investing in Chinese stocks. I said that 2 years ago. There was a time when Alibaba, JD.com, PDD, Baidu, etc. Baidu's real big in artificial intelligence right now. It's kind of the Google of China. I would continue to avoid Chinese stocks. It's not a good environment to invest in Chinese stocks. Okay, when we come back, we're going to take... I got a new weight loss stock to talk about. And then we'll take a little look underneath the surface of the market to see what is moving today. We'll be right back. And welcome back here to the final segment of today's Best Stocks Now show. Well, the most important thing we can check in on right now are the earnings that have been reported. I thought I had another weight loss drug, but now I see it selling off. So I've kept my eye on Viking Therapeutics, but I see it's down and not a very good reaction to their latest update. I did talk to somebody, too, yesterday that's tried Ozempic. For weight loss, which is Novo Nordisk drug, also known as Wegovy. And they couldn't handle it. They got physically sick from it, but it did cause weight loss. Yeah, well, that's a difficult way to lose weight. But still, I'm just seeing all over the place. I'm seeing fallout, and I read today that I think it's Abbott Labs or one of them, which the weight loss surgeries, okay, are dropping demand because of the weight loss drugs. We've seen Walmart, the snack aisle is not as busy as it used to be, and you know, the clothing, some are calling for a makeover of people having to re-wardrobe, you know, buying you know, going from a 40 waist to a 30, whatever the case may be, there's going to be massive impact. We've seen a massive impact on the dialysis, kidney dialysis stocks recently. So anyways, but it's not all. I mean, there are some apparently. Now, I don't know if you switch from Ozempic on over to Lilly's drug, which is Mounjaro. I don't know. So anyways, I try to get as many testimonials of people that are actually using it as I possibly can, and I've heard nothing but really good things, except for one person who said she couldn't take the drug. She got sick on Ozempic. All right, let's take a look at the earnings. Boy, we got some real sparklers today, and we got some real duds today. And, you know, I just was thinking in the market there's a lot of duds. There's a lot of great stocks, but for the most part, the vast majority are mediocre at best. And I was just thinking in my mind, would I rather own Intel right now, or would I rather own NVIDIA? And, I mean, you could say that about every sector in the market. Would you rather own Lilly right now? Would you rather own Merck, which doesn't seem to have much of anything going on? There's just, and then some would say, well, own them all, and you're going to have some winners. It's like buying a giant bag of baseball cards and searching through those cards, you know, for the Miggies or the Stars in the Bryce Harpers in that pack. When the vast majority of those baseball cards are, you know, relief pitchers that you've never heard of, mop-up guys. That's just the way it is. And the stock market's the same way. And the bigger the index, for instance, the Russell 2000, there's maybe 1 or 2% in there that are good, and the other 1,950 are, for the most part, garbage stocks. I'm a guy that looks at 500 to 1,000 stocks every day for the last 20. I can recognize a garbage stock. The vast majority of the market are garbage stocks. Okay, let's take a look at who's doing well today. Procter & Gamble. Okay, that shows the strength of the consumer. It comes back to the consumer and earnings and the jobs market. Okay, those are the three big indicators for stocks. Procter & Gamble's up 2.4% today as they beat their earnings estimates. Now, I realize it's a consumer staple. This is stuff you got to have, but they really had a stellar quarter. Their earnings were up 13%. And their sales were up 5%. That's one of the best quarters in recent memory for me for Procter & Gamble. It's not a stock that I would own. It's a single-digit grower. It's been growing by 7% per year over the last 5 years. I would rather have 12 to 20%, somewhere in there. They do pay a dividend of 2.5%. But that's a good report. And, of course, Procter & Gamble is a member of the Dow. Procter & Gamble is a member of the S&P 500. So, that earnings beat goes into the tally for this quarter of companies beating earnings estimates, which right now we're running at about 80%. And, of course, their projections for next year are very important, their forward guidance. The other big report today that's pretty good is Travelers. And, of course, the insurance stocks have done very well, because most of the reserves that they hold to pay out claims are in short-term paper, medium-term paper, and they're earning, 5, 6% on that paper right now, when in the past they were earning nothing, next to nothing. You know what it's been like to have a CD like a couple years ago, trying to scrape together a little bit of income off your savings, etc. It was a dry well, and now it's a very fertile well, one of the best we've had in a long time. And Travelers and other insurance companies, I know they're boring, but this is a good environment. Travelers is looking for 40% growth in earnings between this year and next year. When it's been more of a high single-digit grower, you've got a different environment right now for Travelers than in the past. It's all about interest rates. There are some sectors that benefit from high interest rates, and then a lot of sectors that get whacked by it. Okay, United Airlines, terrible report. I wouldn't own an airline stock. Look at that stock breaking down. That's just ugly, and I'll give you one more ugly one. A company that I have rarely agreed with over the years is Morgan Stanley. They are so bearish on the market. Mike Wilson, I don't know why anybody would ever buy a stock. That stock is down 7.7% today, Morgan Stanley, hitting a new 52-week low. Like I say, every sector has good stocks, and every sector has, the majority of them are just average, or they're even bad stocks. Well, there's no guarantees. I mean, that's the thrill of the hunt, right? Looking for those best stocks out there in today's world. It's a different world that we live in today. The 20 stocks that I would buy for grandkids today, and then again, you can't own them forever, but they're the best stocks now, it would be totally different from the 10 I would have bought 10 years ago, right? It changes, and it even changes from year to year. Well, if you'd like to set up an appointment with us, talk to us over the phone, Zoom. We're meeting in person here today and yesterday, 855-611-BEST. If you wanted to sample the newsletter and see what we're all about and see what our macro forecast, there's nothing more important than that, get 2 free weeks at GundersonCapital.com. GundersonCapital.com. Have a great day, everybody.
This show is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Bill Gunderson or clients of Gunderson Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Gunderson Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm. All accounts are held at Ameritrade. Ameritrade is a member of SIPC and FINRA.